It's the Popmatic Podcast for September 21st, 2016.
There's no knowing where we're rowing, or which way the river's flowing.
Coming to you from the wastelands of Loompaland, it's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Augustus Gloop, and joining me today are...
Veronica Salt. Sorry.
You want to start
I was
over?
Going for Veronica Mars. I was thinking that's not the right person.
Excellent. Excellent. Veronica Mars. Candy bars, chocolate, Willy Wonka.
There's a connection. I'm the Candyman.
Yeah.
A somewhat hoarse Sarah.
Frederick Frankenstein.
You're supposed to say Mike TV.
No.
Oh, yeah, Bill. All right. 2016 has been a rough year for celebrity deaths, with each one seeming like an insult to one's personal aesthetic or childhood memories. The death of Gene Wilder was perhaps not so much of a surprise given his age, but... it was nonetheless incredibly sad. Gene Wilder hadn't done much work in the last couple of decades, but he defined a certain comedic type with just a handful of roles, both in collaboration with director Mel Brooks and as candy maker Willy Wonka. So maybe we could, as a group here today, could this show can try to persuade whatever cruel god has turned its back on 2016, and maybe they'll take Johnny Depp instead of Gene Wilder, and we'll let you know how that works out. Next week. So, Bill, please tell us about some Gene Wilder stuff that you like.
Well, the Wilder film that I'm wild about is the comedy thriller Silver Streak. Silver Streak was written by Colin Higgins, who also wrote the cult movie Harold and Maude, and directed by Arthur Hiller, a journeyman director whose resume is all over the place. The Americanization of Emily, The Hospital, The Out-of-Towners, The Man in the Glass Booth, and The In-Laws. Also, Mr. Hiller just passed away himself in August of this year. It was the first teaming of Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder. Silver Streak takes place almost entirely on a train. It's essentially a murder mystery, and one of the great running gags is Gene Wilder getting thrown off the train. And every time he does it, he says this naughty word.
George Caldwell is taking the Silver Streak to Chicago.
First class? Yes, sir. Right this way.
He's a busy publisher who's taking a train for one reason only.
I just want to be bored.
Come on. Well, you're in for the ride of your life.
Yeah.
You just pick out a little chickie, my friend, and it's hug and munch all the way to Chicago.
What do you publish?
Oh, mostly nonfiction. Cookbooks, how-to-do-it books.
It's very interesting. Are you married?
Divorced.
But in the next 3 days, he will fall in love. He will witness a murder. And become involved in a bizarre international intrigue.
All right, listen, Buster, you're in trouble. And I mean big trouble, because I'm reporting you. All right, enough's enough. If you're willing to forget it, I don't believe this. Are you kidding?
From an innocent passenger, George Caldwell will become a victim. A man who will be forced to risk his life in order to save it.
Hold that! Don't move or I'll shoot!
He will fall into possession of the priceless Rembrandt papers and into a perfect frame-up for murder.
Holy moly, you shot him!
All right, mister. Just keep your hands where they are and we'll have no trouble.
Give me that.
Don't shoot.
He will make a friend.
Who are you? I'm a thief, man. What do you want you for anyway, man?
Murder.
Drop me off anywhere along in here, okay? I don't mess with the big end.
And become a fugitive from the law, wanted in every state.
Wait right here.
Go get the tickets and it's goodbye, George.
What are you talking about? Well, how are we going to get on the train?
I got an idea.
I can't pass for black.
You tell him. I didn't say I was going to make you black. I said I was going to get you on the train.
It's comedy.
That's my man. That's my man. I don't think we'll make it past the cops.
We'll make it past the cops. I just hope we don't see no Muslims.
It's romance.
You've got shoe polish behind your ear.
And adventure in the runaway suspense hit of the year. 20th Century Fox presents a Frank Yablans presentation. Silver Streak. Starring Gene Wilder, Jill Clayburgh, Richard Pryor, and Patrick McGoohan as Devereaux.
Why are we going so fast?
You've got a dead engineer in a runaway train that's going to hit Chicago in 15 minutes.
By plane, by train, by the edge of your seat, it's the most hilarious suspense ride of your life. Nothing can stop Silver Streak.
Silver Streak also stars Jill Clayburgh, Patrick McGoohan, Ned Beatty, Clifton James, and Richard Kyle.
Patrick McGoohan
yes. Was in Silver Streak?
He's in Silver Streak.
I gotta watch that now.
And Richard Kyle, who plays Jaws in the James Bond films.
Wow.
I also have to mention the fantastic score by Henry Mancini. In the year it came out, 73, 74, it was a huge hit. And so take a train trip from Los Angeles to Chicago, not literally, but figuratively, and watch Silver Streak and have a fun trip.
Editor's note? Great segue. No, really.
But anyway, go on.
Later on this month. Well, you can tell that here's a game for you today, gang. You see how annoyed I was when I wrote this. Oh, boy.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, boy. So today I thought I'd talk to you all about a movie where a grown man lures small children to his home with candy. And I'm, of course, talking about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Where is fancy bread? In the heart or in the head?
Oh, boy. I got to pad this out somehow. Charlie Bucket is a blonde little twerp living with his weird bedridden grandparents and his mother in an unnamed city. I found out this morning that it was filmed in Munich. Assumed it was filmed in London since everybody's
that
British but them, but go figure.
It looks more like Munich, though.
That's good. Also, within the same city is the chocolate factory of the reclusive Willy Wonka, a businessman who closed off his factory from the rest of the world when his many rivals tried to steal his candy recipes. Wonka announces that he has hidden 5 golden tickets in 5 random candy bars. A child gets a golden ticket. They will be given a tour of his chocolate factory. 5 children from around the world get one, including Augustus Gloop, who looks like Jeremy. Fire Bogard, a gum chewer. Mike TV, the television watcher. Veruca Salt, the band that did Seether and Volcano Girls.
Nice.
The Seether. Right here, right now.
A teenage Mike found them very attractive. And, of course, bland nobody Charlie Bucket. It is real that each of the children has been approached by a creep named Slugworth who will give them lots of money for a specific candy that Wonka is developing. Anyway, vanilla pudding in human form, Charlie Bucket takes along his Grandpa Joe, who can somehow walk after lying in bed for 20 years. Even as a child, I didn't get that. It's like he, his legs just atrophied.
He waddled at first.
It's the magic of movies.
There's a whole musical number about, you know, hey, I could totally walk. Who knew? Did the power of song and chocolate for my boy to get me out of bed.
Chocolate really. Is magic.
It is.
Also, he smoked tobacco. That helped. That helps kids.
You didn't look like one of those guys.
Surgeon General says you can get out of your wheelchair.
It stunts your growth, but it helps you keeps your legs short and strong.
So much to be cut out. Willy Wonka is played by Gene Wilder in a way that is difficult to describe. It's magical, playful, yet also with a sense of menace and danger. See the boat scene, one of my favorite boat scenes in music movie history.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell a-glowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
Oh, man.
We're going to need a bigger boat scene.
It should have been. I heard this morning that he would only take the part on the condition that his character would be introduced with a cane and a limp, only to do like a somersault afterwards. It is in this way that he subtly implies that he's a man who's not to be trusted. I was like, that's so subtle, it went over my head. Each of the children is picked off one by one by their obsessions. I've heard that some equate them to the seven deadly sins, minus lust and sloth, I guess.
You can't put lust may in differ. A child movie.
Well, there's a teenage boy who enjoys squeezing candy.
My TV has a lust for television.
Yeah, right? True.
Interesting. I mean, you know.
Oh, wait. His could be sloth. Interesting. Anywho, more to be discussed later. Leaving only Styrofoam Rice Cake Charlie Bucket, who refuses to give a prototype of the experimental Everlasting Gobstopper to the villainous Slugworth, proving somehow that he's the ideal candy magnate. It's a great film. You should check it out.
Except for the horrible main character in the film.
Like, well, each of them have a defining characteristic except for Charlie, who exists.
Yeah.
He's the heart.
Yeah. Yeah, really. He's the good kid.
I know that that's a foreign concept to you, but
he's
a poor...
Except
in my house because I was delivering the salt.
It's about
I get it. He's got feelings and empathy.
It's about upward mobility via golden tickets.
Yep.
He's so poor. Fizzy lifting drinks.
He's so poor. He gets one chocolate bar
a year. He should have gotten in bigger trouble for that because everybody else got kicked out of the factory and they just got...
Yeah, exactly. Like if Augustus Gloop had gotten stuck in the pipe and was all like, I would not give Slugworth the candy, then, you know, there'd be no movie.
Also, there is a price I would have sold it. Just putting that out.
Wow, you would not have become candy magnate?
No, I'm Veruca Salt. Did you miss that part?
She wants it now, man.
Fun singing Volcano Girl.
She's the one that with the greedy one with the daddy. I went to Pirate.
Daddy. Turns into a giant blueberry.
No, she's the one that goes down the sheet with the gold pipe.
She's a bad egg.
I want it now.
She wants a feast. She wants a bean feast.
I don't really want a bean feast. I'm not British enough for that.
Who's the girl that turns into a blueberry?
Violet Beauregard. Because Violet's turning Violet.
Violet, you're turning Violet.
Yeah. Best line in the movie.
What kind of business you in, Salt?
Nuts.
What do you have, Sarah?
Well, I've got Young Frankenstein. Woohoo.
Spoiler.
Yeah, I know, right? First of all, I propose we have a Gene Wilder month instead of just 1 week. Is anyone going to argue with me that I'm wrong about how talented that man was and therefore deserves it? I didn't think so. But in honor of him, one of us needed to talk about arguably Mel Brooks' best film of all time, Young Frankenstein. Excuse me, Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
If you haven't seen this movie, stop what you're doing right now. That includes listening to us babble and go watch it. To the lumberyard, I say. It is your destiny.
It's coming from the deep, dark recesses of the mind of Mel Brooks. I love him. Young Frankenstein!
Sonic, you hear me? Give my creation life!
This guy means business.
Ah! Young Frankenstein!
Oh dear, nothing left. What shall we throw in now?
Starring Gene Wilder as Dr. Frankenstein.
That's Frankenstein. But what about your grandfather's work, sir?
My grandfather's work was doo-doo!
Peter Boyle as the monster.
Wow!
Marty Feldman as Igor.
My grandfather used to work for your grandfather.
I'm sure we'll get along splendidly. Oh! Sorry.
Cloris Leachman as Frau Blucher.
You played that music in the middle of the night?
Yes!
To get us into the laboratory?
Yes!
And it was you who left my grandfather's book out for me to find?
Yes!
So that I would...
Yes!
Then you and Victor were...
Say it. He was my boyfriend!
Cary Grant as Inga.
Would you like to have a roll in the hay? Roll, roll, roll in the hay.
Kenneth Mars as the inspector. And Madeline Kahn as Elizabeth.
Where am I?
Calm down.
What are you going to do to me?
I'm not afraid of you. Listen. I have to be back by 11:30. I'm expecting a very important call.
Kill the monster! Storm your castle!
It's my great secret!
C. Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein.
Yes, I think we could all use a good laugh.
But don't see it alone. Don't miss Young Frankenstein, personally directed by Mel Blazing Saddles Brooks in black and white. No offense.
But don't go to Netflix to do it because it's lame and doesn't have any Gene Wilder movies on it at all.
Wow.
I know. Wow. I found that out last week when I went digging through his IMDb list and was trying to find other movies to watch.
You can even get Haunted Honeymoon.
You get nothing. Absolutely wow. Nothing. That was depressing. But guess what? The library does, and Young Frankenstein, Frankenstein, is included in the catalog. This is not the horrific Mary Shelley telling of a human-slash-monster created by a mad scientist-slash-modern Prometheus. A mad scientist is included, yes, i.e. Gene Wilder. Who are we talking about again?
Jean Wilder.
Oh, it's French. Oh, okay.
Mais oui. Mais
oui.
Oh,
Gene Wilder.
There's a mime.
Yeah, yeah.
Bonjour. I said bonjour.
But as you may well know about Mel Brooks' films, they're typically filled with a heaping bowl full of humor, suggestive material, and timeless quotes applicable in most situations. It doesn't take an abnormal brain to understand the jokes, nor one of Hans Delbruck, though I'm positive his was preferred. On top of having Gene Wilder play the lead with quiet dignity and grace, the cast includes several other talented folks, including Peter Boyle, Cloris Leachman, Madeline Kahn, Marty Feldman, and another famous Gene Hackman. Sadly,
it's a Gene machine.
It is, yeah. Sadly, outside of Cloris and Gene Hackman, the rest of these talented individuals are no longer with us. Sigh. Which is why I wanted to not only boast how...
Gene Hackman's still alive.
Yeah, I said besides. Oh, besides
sorry.
Him and
I got you. Sorry,
you up the Hackman episode.
See if he can last for 7 more days.
Yeah, major correction. Do a Hackman
still
watch.
Alive? Last we checked.
Dear Gene Hackman, your career is dead, but are you? Then he comes to punch me in the face.
All right, well, this is why I wanted to boast not only a great movie, about a great movie that this is, and also one of Gene's best, but I wanted to provide a few fun facts about the film, a film that reveals the sweet mystery of life. According to a few sources on these facts, including IMDb, this was apparently Gene Wilder's favorite movie he's ever made. He proposed the idea for this film when he and director Mel Brooks were making Blazing Saddles. Many of the scenes in the film were ad-libbed, actually, including the shifting hump on Marty Feldman's back, which took the cast and crew a little while to notice. And
continuity, it's fun.
Yeah. And Gene Hackman's line at the end of his scene, "I was gonna make espresso." That scene immediately cuts to black because the entire crew busted out laughing after he says it. Gene Wilder constantly cracked up during takes. According to Cloris Leachman, he killed every take with his laughter and nothing was done about it. Shots would frequently have to be repeated as many as 15 times before Wilder could finally summon a straight face. This is how I felt when I was writing my notes for this week, actually, remembering all the jokes from that movie. It was kind of hard to not laugh. And then, though Brooks originally thought the walk this way joke was too corny and was considering taking it out, it actually made the reviewing audience laugh pretty hard. And in 1974, rock band Aerosmith, you might know him, took a break from a long night of recording to see this film. Steven Tyler wrote the band's Walk This Way the morning after seeing the movie.
Is that true?
According to IMDb, it is.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So,
I would never put those two things together.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a movie about Janie getting a gun.
And last fact, but not least, Gene Wilder's performance as Dr. Frederick Frankenstein is ranked 9 on Premier Magazine's 100 Greatest Performances of All Time. So, however means you choose to watch this movie, whether it be checking it out from us or going to see it in theaters when Fathom Events releases it again for one night only on October 5th, be sure to always put the candle back when you're done. Veronica.
It's in glorious black and white too.
Yeah. Apparently that was another fact. Yeah. He I forget which production or whatever made it, but he wanted it in black and white. And the first company he went to, they said no.
Yeah.
So.
And do you realize that all that that they bring the monster is from the original
Frankenstein?
That's all from the original.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I was little, in the summertime, we used to go to our local library about once a week or so to get books and movies to keep me out of trouble. So the AV section in our library was teeny tiny, and it was right inside the front door of the adult section. You had to go right around the corner to the left. But all we had were they had CDs and VHS tapes. Mm-hmm. And the VHS tapes was basically a box of cards that you could flip through, and then the librarian would give you the tape at checkout because apparently we didn't trust each other. So it seems like every time we went to the library, my first stop was always that box because I wanted to see if Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was in it because we had like one copy of it. So this was the version Mike just talked about, and sometimes we got lucky, sometimes we didn't. But that movie was really my first exposure to Gene Wilder. I also remember being amazed in the movie when he takes his hat off. I think it's probably after he does the flip, and his hair goes all cattywampus.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, when I think of Gene Wilder, that's kind of always the picture that comes to my mind. So there was more to Gene Wilder, though, than just being a candy magnate. He was a comedic actor, as we've mentioned, who collaborated with Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor. But in 2003, he stopped acting and kind of turned more to writing. Now, admittedly, he'd been writing all along. He penned scripts that Sarah mentioned for Young Frankenstein. But then he explored both fiction and nonfiction, including titles like My French Whore or Something to Remember You By, both of which the library has. I have not read those. But today I wanted to talk to you about his memoir that he wrote in 2005, which is called Kiss Me Like a Stranger, My Search for Love and Art. Now, I initially picked up this book because I wanted to read about his relationship with Gilda Radner, who he married in September 1984. Radner was Wilde's third wife, and they met on the set of Saturday Night Live, and they were together until Radner's death from ovarian cancer in 1989. Gene Wilder always comes across as so calmly silly. It's kind of nice to get a little bit more depth on him. Now, the book gives us stories kind of about his creative process on both the stage and screen, as well as going behind the scenes for anecdotes about our favorite movies. Wilder was more than a one-trick pony, and if you want more of him besides just his comedic film work, definitely check out one of his books. That will show you another side of your childhood candy guru. P.S. Willy Wonka is still checked out. I just checked.
Mike, sorry. Return it.
I kind of find that golden
ticket. Share it, Mike. I want it now.
You know, gotta watch more TV.
There's great.
I'm the first person to be sent by television.
Wonkavision. I just did a Jay Leno thing. Wonka is a candy brand. You know, they make actual.
Yeah, they actually make nerds.
There's a Wonka chocolate bar that I used to like scour the city that my hometown
was it Munich.
I used to like my friend and I would go to different stores looking for it. There was like this chocolate bar like this, and it said Wonka on it, and it had little graham crackers in it. Mm-hmm. It's the best candy bar I've ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. I really loved it.
But I would like to point out that everlasting gobstoppers do not.
They
last
do not
forever.
Last they do forever. Not. No, that's true.
No matter how hard you try.
From what I read, Quaker Oates was involved in the original production.
I read that this
when
morning.
The movie came out.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Put out candy bars. Yeah. Now this is in the early 70s, yeah. So I don't have any. But the movie wasn't a success. It's been a cult film.
I don't remember the chocolate when I was growing up, but I remember
so bad that Paramount just like let the rights go and Warner Brothers picked it up.
Yeah,
which is just a surprise.
Hindsight.
Apparently home video, major
cult film.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. Kind of off topic, but It's a Wonderful Life. It flopped so bad, but then
it went to the public domain. That's why it's on television so much. At least it used to be because it was in the public domain.
And Let Us Not Forget a Christmas Story.
Oh,
so
yeah, yeah.
Oh, fudge. Didn't say fudge.
And Roadhouse.
Wait, hang on. Roadhouse?
Yeah.
That's a classic.
Yeah.
That's, you know, pain don't hurt.
Oh, damn it. Speaking of pain not hurting, beat me to the punch.
Nice. I ripped out the throat of your joke.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of pain not hurting, imagine being a 7-year-old boy or girl, and having your dad tell you that there is a movie that you can watch where a bunch of cowboys sit around a campfire eating beans and passing gas. You're going to want to see that movie. So my dad dropped this bomb on me in 1987 while I was reading the novelization of Mel Brooks' Star Wars spoof, Spaceballs.
I read the novelization of Spaceballs.
Aw, good man.
Wow.
We both
did. Nerd Award.
My Scholastic, so they took out all the bad stuff.
Yeah. I was going to say, how did that work? Because seriously, that's half the
I followed
the major,
that up.
Butthole scene was taken out. I think they just called them like jerks or something.
Yeah, I think that's usually the dub when they do it on TV.
I followed that up with the novelization of Adventures in Babysitting because that was my access to movies because my hometown didn't have a movie theater.
You poor thing.
Yeah, that's me. So when I finally saw the film, this famous film, Blazing Saddles, the campfire scene did not disappoint. I was probably a little too young to get most of the jokes in the movie. I knew some of them were dirty. Some of them had to do with race. And I think maybe the first time I saw it was on TV, so a lot of it was sort of I think it was, the fart scene was, just silent.
I remember watching it.
On TV. USA Network, and the fart scene makes silent.
Sense. Yeah, you
but
see
everything else was in there.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
When I was reading the facts for this, that's the first time farts have ever been in a movie.
I heard that, that's incredible.
Breaking new ground.
It was completely quiet.
You see him stand up and sit down.
And then one guy's just like, woo-wee.
Yeah, then he walks out and is like,
Mel Brooks said he couldn't, watching old westerns, he couldn't understand how they were all sitting around drinking coffee and eating beans and not just letting them loose.
See, farts are always fun. I can't believe Bill made a fart joke and didn't say, how about them cubs? I even wrote, how about them cubs down, so I would remember to say it just in case he got uncomfortable. Oh, that's fantastic.
Well, it's relevant this time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
This is fart appreciation.
Yes. Well, that's next week. I'm going to talk about the gas we passed. Mike's going to talk about everybody poops.
The fart museum.
Released in 1974, Blazing Saddles was a send-up of the Western film genre. But more than that, it was also a satire of race relations in America. Sounds hilarious.
Torn from the fiery pages of the mightiest annals of the West comes the supreme saga in the great tradition of frontier drama.
He rode a blazing saddle, he wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far.
What's your name?
Well, my name is Jim, but most people call me Jim.
So the film, which was written by Mel Brooks, Norman Steinberg, Al Ugar, Andrew Bergman, and Richard Pryor, is about a crooked attorney general named Hedley Lamarr, played by Harvey Korman, who plots to steal a large tract of land in order to sell it for a profit when the railroad comes through to town. So when the sheriff of the town of Rock Ridge is killed, Lamarr hires Bart, played by Cleavon Little, a black railroad worker for the job, knowing that the all-white town will reject Bart and give up the fight for their land. So Bart then teams up with a town drunk, a washed-up alcoholic gunfighter named the Waco Kid, played by Gene Wilder, and together they win over the town folk of Rock Ridge and hatch a plan to put the screws to Hedley Lamarr and his gang. So Mel Brooks originally wanted co-writer Richard Pryor to play the part of Black Bart, but the studio refused on insurance grounds, citing Richard Pryor's recent drug arrest. But Cleavon Little is a better trained actor than Richard Pryor was, and he kind of like the slapstick. And
Pryor did contribute to the script, though. Apparently, he wrote all the scenes of almost every line that Mongo says, which is just bizarre.
Cleavon Little did?
No, Richard Pryor.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, that I bought.
Yeah, yeah. He's a co-writer on the film.
Did Mongo talk a lot?
Yeah, it's like he didn't tell that much. Mongo life share. Mongo only pawn in Game of Life. Which is the funniest joke I'd ever heard.
Fun fact, that is played by a pre-Webster Alex Karras. So.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa. My mind is blown.
Yeah, George from Webster. He was also a football player, that guy.
So I've heard.
So, speaking of Gene Wilder, this was Blazing Saddles was his second collaboration with Mel Brooks. And it's kind of a more restrained role than, certainly than Young Frankenstein, and from what I remember of the producers. Gene Wilder here, he has kind of this like serene, sad sack thing about him. And in other roles, he seems like he's like screaming and yelling or like kind of working himself into a fit. He also really seems like he's just sort of amused by the whole thing, which I really like. Like, he's just proud to be there, almost like he's, like, not even acting. He's just like, you guys are doing a great job. And I love this. And I don't know. There's something about that that I really find charming. Now, there's also a really funny bit where Black Bart and the Waco Kid are in the sheriff's office, and Black Bart rolls a marijuana cigarette and is smoking it and passes it to Waco Kid. And the Waco Kid, like, takes a big hit off of it, and then it starts talking like this. That's really good. Also, so this movie, there's a lot of the N-word is dropped a lot of times, and that's kind of part of the movie because, you know, there's this black sheriff that comes to town and everyone is shocked. And this is 1974, so we're just 6 years removed from the 1968 presidential election where George Wallace, the segregation now, segregation forever guy, won 5 states. So the temperament of the nation was maybe a little more relaxed towards racial epithets at the time. But it sort of all plays into the part of the movie. Richard Pryor apparently told Mel Brooks not to hold back on using the word. Say, like, it's like you really need to hit people in the face with it. And they certainly do. It is free-flowing. So unfortunately, that is one of the things that makes the movie sort of feel very much of its time and maybe not as contemporary as today, although maybe I'm wrong about that. The entire cast of the movie is really fantastic. Slim Pickens is in it, who you would recognize from cowboy movies and stuff. And also his name is Slim Pickens, which is maybe the greatest name.
You have to be a cowboy actor
Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, pretty much.
And don't forget Dr. Strangelove.
As we both said.
I will not. Also, Madeline Kahn, who is in Young Frankenstein, is in here. And probably the part that made me laugh out loud the most this most recent time that I watched it, I can't remember her character's name. She's
Lily von Stupp.
There you go, Lily von Stupp.
The Teutonic Titwillow.
Yeah. Wow. So she's trying to seduce Black Bart, and the next day he's leaving, the plan kind of backfires, and she is all in love with him or whatever, and he's trying to leave, and she's like, oh, please stay. And he just stands at the door and he says, you're making a German spectacle of yourself. For some reason, that really made me lose it.
Oh,
and it was fun to watch it again, first time in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And adios, Gene Wilder. Hey, guys.
Hey, Jeremy.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe
the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's Tickling My Fancy.
Bill?
Okay, on October 7th, 2016, The Girl on the Train will be released into theaters. The Girl on the Train is based on a novel by Paul F. Hawkins, and before you see the movie, I highly recommend this complex thriller which deals with alcohol abuse and domestic violence. I finally got around to reading it, and it's just like what took me so long, because I really thoroughly enjoyed it. So I just want to recommend highly the book The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins. Also, on September 29th, 2016, on Turner Classic Movies, they are having a tribute to Gene Wilder. They're having Role Model. It's this great hour-long interview with Alec Baldwin where he interviews Gene Wilder. They're also showing Young Frankenstein, Start the Revolution Without Me, The Frisco Kid, and Bonnie and Clyde. That's on September 29th. Michael.
Hey. We're going to rely on memory, so... cue future corrections, but Saturday the 24th at the Belcourt, they're doing part of the Jules and Jim movie marathon. Some good stuff that I've seen and or not seen. Looking forward to, like, you know, His Girl Friday and Preston Sturges movie that name escapes right now, and Once Upon a Time in America. Oh, yeah. Or Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time in America is like 6 hours long, but they're showing the one in the West.
Well, that's only
the
5 hours
long. The one with Evil Henry Fonda.
Yeah.
In a very cool role.
When is that?
Saturday the 24th.
Okay.
Jules and Jim is a tribute to the late Jim Ridley, who was the editor of The Scene. Very nice guy. I met him once. Apparently, these are a lot of his, like, favorite movies. apparently they got like a list of them, and they just kind of chose which ones they could show. And it's starting on Friday, they're showing, I think, three movies, and then they're doing like all day Saturday, and then they're doing a couple on Saturday, on Sunday, ending with Stop Making Sense on Monday. So they're showing, like, you know, the original Jules of Jim movie from Francois Truffaut, The Warriors.
Warriors?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can come out and play on Friday night.
Mm. He was all over the place, Jim.
Yeah. Warriors is awesome. Yeah. I like me some Warriors.
Come out and play.
It's okay.
Mike.
That's right. Don't mean to bring you down.
Wow.
I also fell asleep during Mean Streets. Anyway, what do you have, Sarah?
Ah, yes. Well, because I couldn't get enough of Gene Wilder this week, I found another one of his movies to be tickling my fancy. Oh. And that's the movie The Producers. This is the original, obviously, and not the most recent musical remake. Clearly, this is the better one.
Nathan Lane is the devil. Nathan Lane is the devil.
All right. Your Lane fixation. You're a laniac.
And that's partly because it was also written and directed by Mel Brooks. Common theme there. This movie was actually made before Young Frankenstein or Blazing Saddles, about 6 years before, actually, and doesn't carry the similar stupid humor as others, but is absurd in its own right. It's because the storyline follows a play producer and accountant as they plot to create a play that will surely flop in order to earn money. Unfortunately, their play doesn't exactly flop like they hoped, and, well, things don't end quite so well for them. That's because the play they pick, Springtime for Hitler...
Germany was having trouble, what a sad, sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around, and then we found the man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy and gay.
We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Yep. Sounds completely ludicrous, but turns out to be quite hilarious.
Very catchy.
Mm-hmm. And this is in spite of the writer's intentions. He's German and therefore wrote the play intending for it to be serious. He wasn't too happy hearing people laugh, and neither were the producers. But it makes for good fun. And the library has both the new version and old. Obviously, the old is better. So check it out if you're interested in seeing a train wreck that you clearly see coming from the beginning. Amanda?
Okay, so on Gene Wilder Day, it is almost an absolute must to talk about one of his favorite leading ladies. And I just happened to have Madeline Kahn's biography, Being the Music Alive, just it was sitting on my desk. So I thought, hey, what the heck? So Kahn died in 1999, also of ovarian cancer. And so now 15 years later, writer William V. Madison finishes his book and shows us her life. So Kahn started life on the path to be a famous opera singer. Her mother was a musician. And so she took lessons with her mom. But in college, Madeline switched her focus to drama, actually earning a drama scholarship to Hofstra University, where other notable Hofstra alums include James Caan, Francis Ford Coppola, and Christopher Walken. Her musical talent, however, helped her apply for various acting parts, including, as we've mentioned, her most famous role as Lily von Stupp in The Blazing Saddles. This is basically the only role I've seen her in repeatedly, and so I was amazed to learn that when she was not on stage, she was kind of a prude. She was shy, and she didn't like to be vulgar, so for as popular as she was with Mel Brooks and as friendly as she was with him and his wife, Anne Bancroft, she kind of hated doing his movies just because of, like... She just couldn't handle the low comedy. Like, it just wasn't... It made her really uncomfortable.
She was more into Clue.
It was embarrassing.
That's a shame.
I was shocked because you think, you know, she plays this lady of the night singer and she doesn't like it.
She's hilarious in Young Frankenstein.
So Blazing Saddles is also where she met Gene Wilder for the first time, and the two had such good chemistry that Wilder actually wrote for her the part of Elizabeth in Young Frankenstein. And as Sarah mentioned, that was always Wilder's favorite... movie. He said he never had more fun than when they filmed Frankenstein. And most of the cast actually thought that Wilder and Kahn were having an affair during this movie. Even Mel Brooks thought so. But the couple always, like, to their dying day, denied the fact. Wilder's second wife, Catherine, divorced him in 1974, also claiming that he was having an affair with Kahn. But wow. Then, yeah, like it was like this was a thing. So, but after the divorce, actually, Wilder started dating Terry Garr, who was their Young Frankenstein co-star. Mm-hmm. So apparently, Kahn and Wilder were never more than just good friends and coworkers. So Kahn also.
Or were they?
Never know.
We'll never know.
Yeah.
So Kahn also found success on the stage as well as on the screen. In 1993, she won a Tony Award for playing Dr. Gorgeous Teitelbaum in the Wendy Wasserstein play The Sisters Rosenzweig. So this was kind of her last major theater role. Her last official role as an actress was as Felicia Rashad's best friend. She was on a few seasons of Bill Cosby's follow-up show, Cosby.
I really liked that show for
a
while.
She was like token white chick.
She was amazing. I used to watch that show in repeats in 2001 or something. And it was really, really good. And they did an episode when she died of just them sitting around talking about her.
Remembering that.
And it was, it was.
And I think that the show was kind of on its way out, but I think her death really kind of put the nail in the coffin of that show not going farther.
It wasn't a wonderful show by any stretch. It didn't have the same family thing, but her inclusion and it was really, really excellent.
Yeah, I guess they had this on-running joke where every time she would leave a room, Cosby would say, "Do you love me?" And she would come back with something. She would ad-lib a new line every time. So that was kind of the running joke on the show. So I think Madison's book is comprehensive. It's maybe a little drier than I would have hoped. It's kind of just the facts, ma'am. But I learned quite a bit more about her than I initially knew. And I really didn't realize that she'd been in that many movies outside of the Mel Brooks oeuvre. So I think I'm going to have to go back and try to catch some of them, like Paper Moon or maybe What's Up, Doc. But if you are any kind of Madeline Kahn fan, you definitely need to check out her book, Being the Music, A Life. Jeremy?
Clue. Also Clue.
Yeah, she was in Clue.
Clues. You guys remember at the first part of the year, you were giving me a bunch of flack because I kept talking about
we always give you flack.
Kim Gordon's book, Girl in a Band.
Another one you talked about 37 times?
14
yeah, I said I was looking forward to it. I said I read it and it was good.
I think there was one you were reading it.
There was another one,
one when you finished it.
Whatever. Anyway,
we would never tease Jeremy. What are you talking about?
She's prolific. She's released some music with a group called Body Head with her and another guy. And then also, I haven't heard that. And then another with, it's called Glitter Bust with her and some surfer. But she has now released a song, her first song just under her own name. It was released, I guess, as a single. Came out the other day. It's called Murdered Out. And it is really good. I really liked it a lot. I was surprised to like it as much as I did. A lot. Anyway, you should check it out.
Have you heard that she has a book, Girl in a Band?
Yeah.
All about a sequel, Girl Still in a Band.
Girl thinks about being in a band.
She's not in the band, guys.
Girl used to be in a band.
If you know that, if you read the book.
Oh. You want to recommend it?
I've never heard of this book.
Want to eat my shorts? Corrections. Who has corrections or addendums? Nope, no one.
Today. Nope.
We got a couple of two things. First, there was some music in the show last week that was courtesy of Nortec Collective from the album Tijuana Sound Machine that is available on Freegal. We have another Nortec Collective CD in the collection, I think. And also, Evil Robot included an obligatory clip of Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall, Part 2, during my controversial top five walls segment. We also have this album on CD. Get it in your collection, or don't. Anything else, folks? Yeah, we got Physical with Olivia Newton-John.
All right.
From her, from Greece.
That's not from Greece.
It's not from Greece. It's probably not.
That's her solo career, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The album called Physical.
The album, yeah. It's the song Physical from the album Physical by the author Physical.
Xana Don't.
Okay, that went poorly.
That's the twilight of my career.
For more information on Xanadu, you can go to, that rhymes,
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adeline.
Subscribe to the Pop-matic podcast, please, on iTunes, Stitcher, RSS feeds, Feed Burner. That's another thing that people use, apparently.
Is what you said. Out this week we're on Sound Orange, I think it's called.
Ooh, Sound Orange.
Yeah, it's nice.
I have no idea what delicious. That is.
I've wanted to be on Sound Orange for a while.
It's a browser-based podcatcher.
Oh, I thought it was a tree-based. is it Florida-based? I don't care.
Sure. Anyway, next week,
Next week, Band in the USA. Band in the USA.
Much like Robbie Robertson, we're going to be banned.
Wow. Man, alive. Oh, and Mel
Howard
Brooks.
Johnson is right.
Yeah, about Gabby Johnson being right.
Yeah. That's the finest example of French gibberish I've ever heard.
I'm so glad those children could be here to hear that today.
And Mel Brooks is the governor, too. Just
Willem J. LeMaine.
I looked up, there was a thing in something I was reading about the movie, LeMaine, like, I can't
that
remember.
That was a farting artist. Yeah, he could fart on command.
Yeah, he would inhale air into his butt.
We have a children's book based on his life. Yes.
And
basically, his name, like, so the governor's name is like, it's like Governor Fartomaniacs.
Yes.
William J. LaFartomaniac.
Yeah.
How about them cubs?
Oh, I was wondering how long it would take.
Oh, man.